However, bold and original though all the new monuments on the Acropolis were destined to be, they still had their foundations deep in the bedrock of what had gone before. The Parthenon, for instance, that daring monument to the new age of Athenian greatness, was being raised on the scorched base of an older, unfinished building. The great temple that had been begun in the 480s BC as a celebration of the victory at Marathon. Now, with his plans for the Acropolis, Pericles was looking to enshrine the memory of Marathon for all eternity. Remembrances of the battle were to be everywhere on the sacred rock. Whether in the ground plan of the Parthenon itself, or in trophies raised to the victory, or in friezes illustrating the fighting, the greatest moment in Athenian history was to be celebrated with a brilliance that would proclaim Athens not merely the saviour of Greece, but her school and mistress too. For those who had fallen at Marathon were not altogether dead. Leave behind the dust and din of the building site on the Acropolis in the morning, and an Athenian might reach the battlefield by nightfall. There, silhouetted against the stars, he would see the great tumulus which had been raised over the honoured ashes of the slain, and beside it a more recent monument, lovingly crafted out of white marble, barely a decade old. The most potent and the eeriest memorial, however, could not be seen, only heard. Every night, it was said, ghostly across the plain, strange sounds of fighting would disturb the midnight calm. The ringing of metal, the hiss of arrows, war cries, trampling, screams. No other field of battle that had been contested with the barbarians could boast of such a visitation. And an Athenian, although he would have dreaded to approach the phantoms, would perhaps have found in their presence a certain source of civic pride. They had been actors, after all, in the greatest drama in history, when Athens had stood alone and preserved the liberty of all Greece. For they were the fathers not merely of children, of mortal flesh and blood, but of their children's freedom, and of the freedom of every person who dwells in the continent of the West. Everything stemmed from Marathon. Everything was justified by it too. Beyond the plain, with its monuments, tumuli, and ghosts, the road wound on northwards, leading over empty hills to a single temple on a slope above the sea. This was Rhamnus, where it was said that Zeus, having pursued Nemesis across the whole world, had finally brought her to earth. From that one rape had been hatched Helen, the Trojan War, and all the long, violent story of hatred between East and West. It had brought Datis the Mede and his great armada to Marathon, barely 5 miles to the south. And so sure was he that nothing could stop him from taking Athens that he had brought with him a block of marble from which he intended to carve a trophy in celebration of his victory. After the defeat of his expedition, the block of marble had been found abandoned on the battlefield, and so the locals had hauled it off to Rhamnus. No better place for it could have been imagined, for the temple that stood there above the slope that led down to the sea was sacred to Nemesis herself. It was clearly her anger that had doomed the barbarians' expedition, and so plans had been made to build a second temple to her and as a memorial to Marathon. It was intended to fashion the marble into a likeness of the goddess. The great Phidias had been asked to carve it. As on the Acropolis, so at Rhamnus, an Athenian might aim to glimpse the future. If he arrived where the marble block stood, waiting to be carved, he might easily imagine that he could see within the spectral purity of its whiteness a foreshadowing of the sculpture that was to be, that he was catching a glimpse of the face of Nemesis herself.